Daniel in the Kitchen talks about food. Daniel in the Kitchen talks recipes. Daniel in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Daniel in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. And I'm going to make a little time here for a word from our manager and our fine engineer. Mike, take it away.
Well, thank you, Donna, Lana. Thank you so much. We're trying something new, and we just started it today. We're calling it a friend drive. So it occurs to us that as the Ames Tribune gets thinner and thinner, and that Mel in the morning just retired, that it's incumbent upon us to step up and be what's needed for this community. And so we figured the more people we matter to, the more we will matter. And that's what we're trying to focus on, is just a brief little campaign to ask you, the kind folks, the people who are discerning enough to have tuned in to KHOI, to let other people in on this best-kept secret. Tell them about the Donna Lana Kitchen, the fantastic look at food and all its, from all different angles, from 30,000 feet up, from looking at our food in terms of acres, all the way down to looking at it in terms of a teaspoon. And that's what happens right here. Tell your friends about this program, or tell your friends about local talk, about all the other great things. Tell them about Tuesday. We have a lot of local producers on. We had All Things Piano on earlier today, Tom Russell's program. We'll hear Science Bites later on with Sam Wormley and Mike Metz. We'll hear Anna Ginger, although she has moved, we still consider one of Ames's own. And we'll hear from DJ Todd with Eclectic Mix and Dream Doctor following that later on with some great music. To let people know, find your angle. We mentioned earlier on Wednesday nights we have 2 hours of literary listening, the final installment of Community Bookshelf, followed by Bookwaves at 8:30, and then followed by Writer's Voice at 9. So people who are into books, that's the way to go. I've talked my way out.
Good job, Mike. Yes, this community radio station is a real gem. Tell others to listen in. Tell others to
invite your friends to join us.
Yes. Well, here on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we talk about food, how we eat. I guess we started out as hunter-gatherers, but we learned a long time ago how to plant things that sustain humans for a long time. So we're going to find out about farming and grain in particular, along with some other things, and we'll learn about something called Kernza. Joining us at our kitchen table today is Wendy Johnson. She and her husband, Johnny Rafkin, have Hoya Food and Fiber Farm. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you, Lana and Donna. I'm so excited to be here today.
Oh, good. Tell us where your farm is, Wendy.
So Hoya Food and Fiber Farm is located in Charles City, Iowa, Floyd County, northeast, north central Iowa.
And did you grow up there?
I did. I grew up here, and I grew up here in the 80s at a time when agriculture wasn't such a, it didn't look bright. The future didn't look bright. So I left after I graduated from high school and went to college at the University of Minnesota, studied fashion design, and I moved to Los Angeles to work in the fashion industry there, where, unbelievably, I discovered my love of food and where food comes from. And that's when I realized also that I could grow food at a much larger scale on some of the richest soils in the world. called Iowa. So I made my way back halfway. I lived here in Charles City when I left when I was 18, and I came back 18 years later to start a career in agriculture, specifically food farming.
Oh, great. So what does your farm grow?
So we started out, a little bit of history. So when I moved back, realized that Iowa, it didn't change much. It's still very much, a corn and soybean dominated agricultural system. And I was searching and looking all over the place, all across Iowa, for food farms. Where can I buy local food? And it was really hard to find. This was in 2010. I'm sure both of you have been in the local food scene for much longer than I have, but it was really difficult, I thought, being from Floyd County, to find local food. And so one of the goals that I had when I moved back was I wanted to grow food for people in my community, whether it be locally or regionally. And so that's the impetus of Joya Food Farm. And we started out with some chickens, some ducks, some pigs, and we had some sheep. It was kind of my grandfather's and my father's flock that they kind of used to just clean up stuff, They were kind of sickly sheep, but we've made mass improvements on the genetics of those sheep. And so we now raise grass-fed sheep, and they're 100% grass-fed, raised and finished. And we certified our land organic. We have a few more acres that are in transition, which we'll talk about a little bit later, using Kernza. And we also custom graze some cattle with the sheep, and we have some cattle of our own. And so we're now up to, I think, like 7 species. We have turkeys, guineas, ducks, chickens, pigs, sheep, cattle, and then some pet goats. So when I was in California, I always got kind of tapped on the shoulder, every year. Hey, Wendy, are you thinking about coming back to Iowa to farm with me? I had been coming back to help in the fall with the harvest.
So he always needed
some help bringing in the harvest, and my sister would come back to help plant. So she'd come back for a week or two in the spring, and I would come back about 4 months in the fall and help. That kind of kept both of our feet in the door of what's happening on the farm. But really, none of us have an agronomic background except growing up on a farm, on a conventional farm that had hogs and then corn and soybeans.
And a few sheep.
and a few sheep, yeah. So it was, my grandmother had passed away too in 2008, which was another kind of a moment where I had to reflect what was going to happen to the farm and the farmland. Was it just going to go to were we going to become a statistic, of like being people out of state managing farmland or selling it or, I really had to think about this land that we're so privileged to be able to manage and to look after.
Well, welcome back to Iowa. We are glad you are here. Nothing like taking a little break in the fashion industry to get you back to your roots. Oh, how good. How good. It's wonderful. And I want to mention that there is a field day at your farm tomorrow, and we'll give more information about that at the end of the show. But this sounds like...
On the 6th.
On the 6th. On Wednesday the 6th. And it sounds like a wonderful thing to go to and to learn about. We want to get back to this thing called Kernza. You said you're using this grain to help being certified organic. But Wendy, what the heck is Kernza?
Great question. And yeah, thanks for having the show and talking about Kernza today. I am so excited about this grain. The major reason I'm so excited about it is because it's a perennial grain, meaning it could be planted once and it can produce more than 1 year of yield. So you plant it once. You don't have to have a lot of inputs. You don't have to do any field work, tillage, except for harvesting it. You can graze it in the same year that you harvest it. You can actually graze it twice, you know, spring and fall, harvest it in the late summer, and it overwinters, so it covers the soil. And it's just a really exciting crop for a very annual dominated state, you know, like Iowa, where we have a lot of water quality issues. It can really answer a lot of concerns that Iowa has. And that grain can be used for delicious breads and baked goods and breweries, beers, and all other sorts of things that grains are used for. So it has this really great dual purpose effect, actually tri-purpose.
I am amazed. We should know this. Grains are a grass. Grass kind of knows what it's doing, but this is being grown for people to use for many, many things. How does it replenish itself year to year? Does it seed itself, or does it come back from the roots?
Well, it does come back from its roots. So its roots are can be 8 to 10 feet long. Oh. I mean, we're talking like big blue stem type prairie roots. And but when you harvest the grain, it's very small, and so in the end you're going to be spitting up some out the back of the combine. And so then it does get reseeded. It's very fine. I think some of our combines today maybe can't handle some of that, such a small seed, and so there's a need to improve those kinds of needs for harvesting. But there is also some crop improvement that is being done through the University of Minnesota and the Land Institute in Kansas, and to improve on the varieties of Kernza available to grow.
At this point, Wendy, so I've been involved with the Land Institute for more than 20 years, so we'll give a little backstory on what Kernza is and how it got here. But I'm just curious, at this point, how many harvest seasons do you expect to get from a planting of Kernza as a farmer?
Three off of one seeding, and it will continue to grow. It's just that the yield for grain will not be very good, because as it reseeds itself, it creates more competition. And so the seed yield will decrease because there's more grass competition of more plants being spread about.
So you have to plow up that land and reseed, or do you have to do some other kind of seed something else in that place? This is exciting stuff. What after 3 years, what happens?
That is a great question, and one that I've been asking myself as well.
Right. I don't think we know yet.
What am I going to plant after? I'm using the Kernza to transition to organic. The transition, as you know, is about 2.5 to 3 years to certify. So this Kernza will actually not be certified until actually next year's harvest. Mm-hmm. It will be certified organic. So I'll have year 2 and 3 certified because I used oats prior to this feeding. So I'm sorry, I just had a brain gap there. Can you repeat that, Lana?
Let's go back and just explain what Kernza is. That's spelled K-E-R-N-Z-A, all right? So it is a grain in the wheat family. It has been bred recently in the last 20 years, or actually starting in 1976, Wes Jackson founded the Land Institute. He is a geneticist. He wanted to breed a grain that was perennial, and he wanted to, as Wes always says, in nature features perennial polycultures, which means plants that you know, come up every year. You don't have to start them from seeds. They go on and on and on. And polyculture means you grow many different things. That's opposed to most agriculture, which is annual, and monoculture, like we grow a field, you know, thousands of acres of corn or thousands of acres of soybean or thousands of acres. So this form of agriculture, which we have kind of boxed ourselves into in the Western world, has some difficult consequences. So Wes, who is quite the visionary, quite the character, had decided as a geneticist and for environmental and reasons, he wanted to breed from scratch a non-existent grain that could be, well, they worked also on polyculture. So there are other things they're also breeding, like sunflowers and things, so that his vision is eventually you could plant a field, a large acreage with several mixed, you know, grains and beans and oil seeds and things like this, that would, once you seed them, grow basically forever, like a prairie. Wes is from Kansas. He's a prairie boy. And as Wendy mentioned, with the Kernza, what this does is develop really deep root systems, which, you know, as we know, it holds carbon, it holds moisture, it creates tilth, it does all kinds of really, really good things. So Wes started out with his breeding program. I think he used, you know, he started with, what was the wheat? The Kernza was started with a, Wendy, do you remember?
Intermediate wheat? Intermediate wheatgrass?
Yes, right. He started with the wild relatives of wheat and looked at all of the gene pools to figure out which grains, you know, might develop, could be bred. And he does not use genetically modification. He uses natural old line breeding techniques. And he has done this for a long time till they finally came up. And Kernza was the first grain that they actually developed at the Land Institute that could begin to produce a food crop. So all of this breeding was done on the private land of the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas. And then it got to be successful enough and the gene pool was standardized enough that it could be, you know, replicated. And they wanted to grow it out. And the University of Minnesota, I mean, the first farmers that started growing it, I think Carmen Fernholz from Minnesota was the first farmer to actually try to grow a field of Kernza outside of Kansas. And there, you know, it had problems. It lodged, which means it fell over before they could harvest. You know, as you said, the grains are small. So in breeding, what they do is they do something called crop improvement, and that started at the University of Minnesota. And the group that you're working with is an outreach to get farmers on, you know, many hundreds of, maybe up thousands of acres, to start to grow this enough to see, because they're still breeding it and tinkering with it. I think they're trying to make the grains a little bigger. And I, you know, you are an experimental farmer who is growing this perennialized grain. Now, as you said, at this point, you can't seem to grow it past 3 years, but I know they must be working on, I mean, this is what traditional plant breeding does. You know, for example, the Native Americans bred corn from a thing called teosinte, which was like, you know, a couple of inches long over thousands of years, to what we all know as corn now. So this is something, a wheat, it's in the wheat family. You can use it like wheat. I cooked with it quite a lot when I was doing events at the Land Institute for about 15 years. I think, a lovely flavor. You know, you won't taste it and go, oh, this, it tastes like wheat, but it has a little bit richer, fuller, nutty flavor. And it doesn't have a high gluten content. So if you want to bake bread with it, you have to add something with gluten, or, you know, like you can do 50% Kernza and 50% traditional wheat. But if you want to make cookies or biscuits or, you know, you're having
biscotti.
I made a, hundreds of biscotti out of it. And actually, at the Land Institute, they have something called the Prairie Festival every fall. Should be coming up usually in the late September, where about 400 people come for, Wes used to call it an intellectual hootenanny, right? They bring in a lot of really interesting, environmentally oriented speakers. And we used to feed 400 people on the prairie, you know, outside, because the meetings are held in the barn at the Land Institute. Very beautiful there. So we used the Kernza first for the apple crisp that we made, because we tried to use all seasonal local food at this event. So it was in the apple crisp. And then we had a very good local baker from Lawrence, Kansas, who started making the bread. And he came up with the 50-50 ratio that worked wonderful for yeasted breads. If you're using yeast, you need something besides the Kernza. But tell us what you're going to be eating with the Kernza at your field day.
So a friend of mine who I met through the North Iowa Food and Farm Network, so it's actually Northeast Iowa, his name is Phil Yonkisauer. He works for the Iowa Food Hub, but he is also a talented chef. And so he started a food truck called Liller Dog. It's a Scandinavian-centric food-inspired truck. And he will be serving like a box lunch, but it will include Kernza bread, included with some sunflower seeds, with some cheese from Hope, Minnesota, like a spreadable cheese, mm-hmm. With our grass-fed beef, summer sausage, and some greens, local greens on top. So it's an open face sandwich. And we'll also be serving a buckwheat version too. As you know, buckwheat is gluten-free. So mm-hmm. it's a gluten-free option and Kernza has a low gluten content, but it has some gluten. And then there'll be a beet kraut and a kohlrabi salad. And for dessert will be a Kernza shortbread with some local currants, I believe, included. So there'll also be a hazelnut oil vinaigrette with some sort of foraged fruit that I cannot remember what it's called. But anyway, it's going to be really fun and delicious. So
see, this sort of thing is wonderful. We're talking to an Iowa farmer, and there is this wonderful food planned. And what's nice about it? No, it doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from Iowa soil. It's really exciting. I want to take a little break here. We'll come back and talk a lot more with Wendy Johnson about what's going on in her farm. This is KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. We're talking to Wendy Johnson. She's doing wonderful things on her farm up in Northeast Iowa. The Joy of Food and Fiber Farm. So much going on. And we're talking about something called Kernza. Hey, who thinks that there's something new under the sun? Kernza is a new grain variety. It's a wheat, but it's a perennial. Now, Wendy, there's Kernza and there's other things on the grocery store shelves. Now, what is Einkorn and what is Kamut? It seems that there's some other options out there. Do you know anything about those?
Well, Kamut and Einkorn are what they call ancient grains.
Ancient?
They're older than they are what wheat was, the current wheat that we eat, which is the predominant wheat, you know, on the market. You buy a bag of Pillsbury flour and that's what you're getting. But before that wheat was bred conventionally, the grain Einkorn and Kamut both existed and were grown throughout Europe and the Middle East. So they are called ancient grains. There's something about, there's a term used in the diploids, is something in the genetics of the grains that some people consider both of those older grains more digestible. They are, if you're cooking, both of them are fairly interchangeable with wheat. So that's, you're talking about Einkorn and Kamut as ancient grains, whereas Kernza is the very newest
new
grain.
Yeah. And Wendy's been growing this as a trout. Wendy, did you harvest this stuff yet? What was it like?
Harvesting Kernza, or before harvesting Kernza, waiting for the Kernza to ripen and get ready. You know, I was thinking in the terms of annual small grains. So we grow food grade and feed grade oats and rye, which are rye is a winter annual, oats is a spring annual, thinking that it would ripen around the same time here, which is usually around the end of July in northern Iowa. But the Kernza was still green. it was not ready. And so there is now a Kernza guide out that is available through the Land Institute, if anyone is interested. It talks about all things Kernza from on the production side. So how to plant it, from how to harvest it, and how to graze it. So that's very helpful. But it ended up being about the end of August, so 24th of August, I believe it was, that we windrowed the 17th of August is when we windrowed it. So we swathed it, put it in windrows. And then on the 24th, we harvested it. And I don't know if you remember, that time it was about 105 degrees here in Iowa, an unusual 5 days of really, I want to say deep heat, and then some really wet nights, like very humid. So it took the grain a little longer to dry out during the day. But it was harvested, and it harvested wonderfully. It's very small, so harvesting it with a regular combine, you have to, tighten everything down much more than you would rye or oats, if you're familiar with that. But there's now more and more people that are starting to harvest it and have the experience. And so I love farmer-led knowledge sharing, and so there are more farmers that are available to answer questions around combining Kernza. But it looked beautiful in the windrow, and it all stuck together. There wasn't a lot of, grain shattering or coming off the stem. And it looks beautiful in the bin. It is binned. So I just wanted to touch on a little bit about the market for Kernza, if we can talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, what do you do with it now that you have it?
Yes, so I am on the board of directors of the Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative, which is led by Carmen Pernholz, who you had mentioned before, mm-hmm. also one of my organic mentors that I've had over the years since I started with organic cropping. And we're just in our beginning steps. So I think you said, Carmen has been growing it now for about 5 years from its kind of inception. There's a lot more research that has to happen with it, but the Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative is working on the supply and the demand end of Kernza. So we are looking at brewers, craft breweries, around the nation, as well as mills and distributors, food distributors, to, you know, that distribute to restaurants and to retailers. Meanwhile, we're also looking at more of a grassroots approach of creating our own bagged flour and then selling it on shelves. And so if retailers like food co-ops or food hubs want to carry the Kernza, we'll have that flour, bagged flour available.
So you have purchase. Some milling, somebody has some milling capacity?
Yeah, so we are working with a dehuller and a for breweries, a place that cracks the wheat, the Kernza, as well as a flour mill, a few different flour mills, one in Minnesota and one in South Dakota, to do more kind of large-scale processing to send out to as a finished product.
I mean, not only are they still working on the breeding of it, you know, to get the seeds bigger and other considerations that help the farmers do it, but they're also, a market is being developed. There have been some, there was initially some excitement, I think basically at General Mills for the Kernza product, and they decided they were going to roll out a big cereal project, and so they, you know, they launched a cereal at the Natural Products Trade Show, which is like, you know, the biggest market you can go to for these kinds of products. And I went to the opening party. It was lots of fun. Everybody was very excited. And then they couldn't really do it because the supply of the grain was not big enough to take the market that they wanted to create. So some of the issues have been growing the market use. There was more demand for the product than could be grown. So that's a kind of that's a good problem to have. But I think because of that experience, there's been some caution about stepping back and, okay, at what scale can we produce it? And then as the scale grows, as there's more of it, how do you grow the market? So you are involved in a lot of those complex questions.
Yes. You know, if you want something to happen, you want to manifest something to happen, you have to get involved, right? That's what I've always believed in. And so I got right in and volunteered.
Oh, I'll do this.
Hey, I want to get involved in this. I want to see more farmers growing Kernza around the state of Iowa and the upper Midwest. That Cascadian Farms on their cereal was a limited release product. And it was very true, Donna. It was because there wasn't enough supply.
It was very limited release.
Very limited, yeah. And so now we have more growers, we have the supply, and now we're, you know, refinding the demand. And so we're having conversations with General Mills currently, you know, who have Cascadian Farm and Amy's Organic and a few others. But we're also looking at more of a widespread way of marketing, and that includes home bakers, you know, and getting it into the kitchens of people who like to bake, who are baking at home or brewing at home, and trying it out as a different product to use. You know, buckwheat pancakes became a thing. You know, Kernza makes wonderful pancakes too. And so there are some smaller mill and distributors that are offering 5, 10, 15-pound bags of flour. And we're in the process, the co-op is in the process of developing that right now.
Okay, so for example, now, when I was able to bake with Kernza, it was because I could just, the Land Institute would, you know, give it to me to play around with. But now, if I want some, where could I and anybody else buy some Kernza flour to try?
So there are a few different places currently right now that carry smaller bags of flour. One is Perennial Pantry, which is located in southern Minnesota. They have Kernza mixed flour. They have just 100% Kernza flour, and they have all sorts of different other flours.
And you can order this online from Perennial Pantry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. PerennialPantry.com, I believe, is the website. The other is in Fairfield, Iowa, Breadtopia, and you can also purchase Kernza flour from Breadtopia.
Oh, right. They're an organization that does all things bread baking, basically, I think, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So now let me ask you another question. As a farmer, you know, farmers, you're running a business here. How can you afford to grow Kernza? How is that doing for you?
So being, I guess, one of the early adapters or adopters of a newer grain, you know, we think about corn and the years and trillions of dollars of research that has gone into corn yields and production today.
Right.
We're with Kernza, like you said, Donna, we're at the very beginning of its life cycle. And so I foresee some really great and wonderful positive things coming out of it. But it takes some time. And so, you know, beginning yields are around 300 to 400 pounds an acre.
Mm-hmm.
And it is valued currently around for conventional Kernza, around $2.50 a pound. But really, if we, as someone who is an early adopter, I feel it is part of my responsibility, as a farmer to also, I'm a food farm, so I market our food already. And so part of it is my responsibility to market and help market my own grain. And so I've gone out and tried to, we've sent some samples to 12 Northeast Iowa breweries to see if they would be interested in starting a Kernza line of beer. And the flour is also something that we're trying to work through while the cooperative is getting the demand piece up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's slow, but one way that we can make it economical, and, you know, if we're looking at opportunity cost of corn, for example, let's say that's $600 an acre. There are cost share opportunities, part of the NRCS, that can help with, and they range from $150 to $1,500 an acre, depending on your size of your operation. That is one opportunity. There's also
wait, you can get cost share for Kernza?
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Excellent.
There's a few different cost share opportunities, and people can learn about that at our field day tomorrow. One is a transition, using it to transition to organic. Another is I can't remember the number of it through NRCS, but using Kernza or planting Kernza, you would get, I think it's around $150 an acre cost share for that. And I think that's over the course of the 3 years or something like that. But I checked with the NRCS if anybody wants more details on that. The other are a few different organizations that are supportive of perennial planting. So Matt Agriculture is one. Climate Land Leaders is another. That are helping provide some cost share to farmers to plant perennials. That includes tree crops, perennial forages, all the way to perennial Kernza.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that kind of support, and also there's grazing. So grazing is a big part of us to be able to add additional days of grazing onto our grazing season. That we've been in a drought. We've had 8 inches of rain since May 1st, which is highly, highly unusual. Our lawns are brown. Everything is crispy. We're still able to graze because we're using rotational grazing, but we have some additional grazing days because we have the Kernza, and it's really, really saved us. We do some custom grazing. And we just moved the cows over just yesterday to start grazing that because we're starting to run out of our forage. I mean, if it doesn't rain here pretty soon, our cool season pastures are about done. And to support 50 animal units, for example. We probably have a little bit more than that now that our lands are bigger, but we're short because we haven't had any rain to regrow. But that kernza, it's so amazing. The day that we harvested that kernza, the next day it started to green up from the roots, from the bottom.
Right, from those and big, long roots. Yeah.
Yes, from those big, long roots. We have started to have, we now have like foot-tall forage from it. And it was harvested, it was cut on the 17th of August. So this is a 2 to 3 week,
right.
Couple-week growth.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm so excited about it.
And we're talking about, it takes a while to grow a market, but this is an amazing thing because we're talking about a perennial plant here, like perennial plants like prairie. Like it has taken not just a few years to grow a prairie, and we're actually learning how to do this. Kernza sounds like a wonderful thing. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen and this fine radio station at www.khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about kernza. Kernza with Wendy Johnson. And Donna's given us a little background on the Land Institute, the development of this grain. And tell us a little bit about West Jackson.
Well, this is, Wendy's work and the farmers that are now growing the kernza out at this point, and it's still a very new, changing grain, and she's like the second generation doing this already. The Land Institute was founded by Wes Jackson in 1976. So that means we're at almost 50 years of experimenting, of growing this idea. I mean, it's quite radical and frankly quite revolutionary, but it's still, we're 50 years into it. Wes always used to say, this really stuck with me because it applies to so many things. He said, if your life's work can be accomplished within your lifetime, you are not thinking big enough. So, you know, at this point, Wes is in his late 80s, I think, and I'm sure he's tickled to death to see all of the things that are going on with young farmers like Wendy. But this takes a long time. We're talking about major changes in the staple crops that literally feed the world.
Yes, so here we are.
Thank you, Wendy, for being a farmer that is taking this on and carrying it forth. And it's exciting for you. It's exciting to hear all the developments. Bravo.
You talked a bit about grazing, and you have sheep. Tell us about your sheep and what you're doing with your sheep.
Yeah, so we are, like I said earlier, we really transformed the kind of the genetics of the sheep that I inherited sort of from my father and grandfather. At a time when bigger is always better, right? You grow bigger, taller, wider sheep and you'll have more lambs and, you know, that's, you have quads and quintuplets and all sorts of like things, which cause the ewe to have a shorter lifespan. So what we're really looking for, since we're grass based, is a shorter, stockier, more efficient on grass, sheep. And what we found through actually lots of PFI field days and through other people, through the annual conferences at PFI, and having, Megan Filbert, who is no longer with PFI, but a ruminant expert and lover of all ruminants, I learned a lot from her, was a shorter, stockier sheep. And we use an Ile-de-France Dorset cross, basically. And we've mixed a little bit of Sam's, which is a South African meat merino, for its wool quality. It is highly efficient on forage and grasses, and it develops such a really delicious, flavorful meat. Not like a mutton in any sort, but it's not a strong flavor, but it's just rich. And so we garnered the interest of, since we're animal welfare approved, certified, and we graze on organic pastures, we garnered the interest from a company that sells animal welfare approved or humane treated meats, specifically lamb, and they're grass-fed. And so through that, the majority of our lamb goes there. We've also garnered the interest of a newer company that is also aggregating, purchasing live animals and distributing that meat across the upper Midwest, as well as we also market some of our own lambs. And so all of our lambs are taken from our farm. They go to a local processor that's about an hour away, and who is also animal welfare approved. And then that meat gets distributed to those other companies via that processor. So it's a really short cycle. It's a shortened supply chain, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think that's just really great about food. Food that's grown here in Iowa shouldn't be, live animals shouldn't be sent to California or China or wherever and then processed and reprocessed again. Keeping it more of this local food shed, because creating a more robust food shed is what we're trying to develop and trying to help grow. So our sheep are great. We put them in front of our cattle. So the sheep, they are more valuable pound per pound compared to beef. That's because they can have multiple births. They drink a lot less water, and they're very resourceful. They eat differently than cattle do. And so we put the cattle behind the sheep when we're grazing. We use adaptive grazing. We move the sheep every single day, depending on the height of forage and forage availability. And then we follow up with the cattle behind. And so it's just we really love sheep, and so much, in fact, that we wanted to add value to them by and to our farm by adding a fiber business on top. And so we utilize that fiber for wool bedding products, used for wool-filled pillows, comforters, mattress toppers, and we even make some really wonderful eye masks that wool is really great for inflammation. So to combat inflammation, especially you get puffy eyes and things. So we've created an eye mask that's covered in humane silk, but you can find that on our website. Our company's name is Counting Sheep Sleep Company, Counting Sheep Sleep Company, .com. And you can order our goods, and we ship nationwide and even internationally.
Yeah, it's a beautiful website. I love wool blankets and comforters.
We've run across other things on this, some past shows. Evidently, there isn't a huge market for wool, as in spun yarn, or at least it's difficult for people that have a small flock to do something with their wool. And what a wonderful name. It's just good. It's just good. Wendy, you tell us what the contact information for your field day tomorrow is going to be?
So you can go on to the Iowa Learning Farms website, and they have the information on that, as well as you could visit Joyo Food Farm's Facebook page, and the information for that is available on our Facebook page, as well as our, I haven't actually posted on our Instagram, so just on our Facebook, or go to Iowa Learning Farm.
But it's good. And that's,
to sign up.
Yeah, and that's Joya Food and Fiber Farm. That's Joia with an accent over the O, just to make it look pretty, I'm sure. Okay, good. Do you have any thoughts about the future of your farm. Are you planning on, like Iowa farms do, are you planning on getting bigger and expanding? What are some of the future thoughts for your farm?
So the future is really exciting, and I'm really excited to be farming right now because I think we're in some really transformative times in our agricultural system. And these kind of increases in thoughts about food sheds and fiber sheds and regionalizing our food more, you know, I've seen such growth from the day I moved here, the year I moved here in 2010 until today. Local food is just, it's everywhere. And I hate to say, but with the help of COVID, it really did help localize and regionalize food, and more food farmers are growing here in Iowa. So we will continue to grow food and all different kinds of varieties of food. But my trajectory is to expand on what it is that we're doing currently, which includes, you know, planting trees, repairing or restoring riparian buffers with agroforestry, enhanced windbreaks, putting in silvopasture. You know, our climate is changing, and we've seen this year and in the past probably few years that it's hotter and drier. And we need some of these systems, these more diversified systems, to help us be more resilient. And so, you know, shade is going to be a huge factor, I think, for anyone that's grazing and raising livestock.
Well, what kind of trees are you planting?
So we're planting about 7 to 8 different varieties of native hardwoods. That includes anything from sycamore, black walnut, black oak, white oak, river birch. I can't think of all of them right now. Northern pecan. There's about, the majority are nut trees, hardwoods, and then also fruit-bearing native shrubs. That includes, you know, aronia and chokecherry and serviceberry and elderberry and such. We feed a lot of our elderberries to our chickens. They love it. And we even feed some of our, like our cleaned out kernza that we had. We've been feeding sprouted kernza to our pigs and our chickens, and they love it. And I've always believed that if you're going to eat meat, especially like an omnivore, like a chicken or a pig, you want to eat something that's not just corn and soy. It didn't just eat corn and soy their entire life, but they ate something diverse, apples and all things that Iowa can produce, you know, apples and berries and fruits and nuts. And they love black walnuts, for example. And I think it can really enhance the flavors of and the nutrient profile of those meats. So that's what we're going to continue to be doing. And I hope that we continue to expand our diversified ag systems, like we're going to touch on tomorrow. It's just so important for the state of Iowa and the landscape and our water quality and for the farmers.
Great.
As well, the people that are working the land.
Lots of good things happening on Joya Food and Farmer Farm. Thank you for being with us, Wendy Johnson. Oh, we've learned a lot, and there's a new grain on the
and
on your
Wendy,
market.
Thank you for doing the kind of farming that you're doing, and to also, I know you've been really involved in Practical Farmers of Iowa and other organizations that not only are you farming, but you are communicating about farming and these really exciting, very important environmental concerns for farmers, environmental and financial concerns for farmers too.
Very
so
good.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
Well, you can, I want to mention, like our engineer said and our station manager said at the beginning of the show, remember, if you're listening to this show, if we are in your ears right now, tell a friend about that, because we want to grow our audience. That's good. That's good. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We've had music by the Barn Owl Band today. We come to you Tuesdays at noon and repeat at 7 p.m. on this fine radio station. Or
and we have a podcast, which will be released, same topic, same conversation, but it will be released on Thursday. You can just go to wherever you listen to podcasts and type in Donalana. That's one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A. second word kitchen, and up it will come for you.
There we are. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had Fine Engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.